Good morning, church. We are going to begin the series, Isaiah 58. We're going to begin it with a video, so I'll just ask you if you would to take note of this video that we're going to watch. Kind of kicks us off.
We were struck in the newsroom today by some remarkable pictures that have just come in from a growing humanitarian disaster in East Africa. They're images from New York Times photojournalist Tyler Hicks, pictures of the starving in Somalia. We talked to Tyler Hicks today, but before we get to that, here's a little bit of background on what's happening there. It's essentially a drought in the Horn of Africa that has destroyed crops for more than a year. Refugees are pouring out of Somalia, the failed, lawless state. The lucky ones reach refugee camps just over the border in Kenya, but already there are 450,000 people jammed in those camps that were designed for 90,000. In all, right now, 12 million people are at risk of starvation. Those are the people Tyler Hicks and writer Jeffrey Gettleman of the New York Times found in Somalia's capital. We spoke to Hicks earlier today. Tyler, your pictures, of course, are about individuals, but I'm curious about what we can't see. Can you give us an idea of how many people are affected this way?
It's not like a place that you have to look very far. Everywhere in the city, there are people streaming in. Particularly, the thing that jumped out at me is the amount of children and how incredibly frail they were. They're women, just almost every single one of them is carrying, at times, just, you know, what looks like skin and bones. And I honestly, there were moments that I didn't even know if the child that they were carrying was alive until they shifted and you could see that the child was moving.
In terms of the people who are truly starving that we see in your photographs, are we talking about dozens, hundreds, thousands?
Thousands, many thousands of people. And the fact that they're actually coming into Mogadishu, one of the most unsafe cities in the entire world, says a lot about the condition of what they're experiencing in their villages and how desperate they have to be.
One of your photographs is particularly striking. It's a photograph of a child lying in a fetal position, clearly starving to death. And I wonder if you could tell us the story of that picture.
This particular child, really, it struck me how skinny this child was. And the position of how the child was laying on the table was just really striking, and I thought really got that point across of how desperate it is there.
You were in Mogadishu for 4 days. I wonder, in the time that you were there, any signs of improvement, any hopeful signs?
Not at all. If anything, it appeared that this would probably get worse before it gets better. They're arriving literally with nothing, and it's a very desperate situation for them.
Tyler Hicks, photojournalist for the New York Times, thank you very, very much for your help.
Thank you.
If you have your Bible, I'd like to ask you to open it up to Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58. Some of you, many of you, maybe all of you, have heard about what's going on in the Horn of Africa right now, Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya, the devastation, the drought that's taking place. And several months ago, back in the spring, I felt like God brought me to this passage here. And, the timing of us as a church going through this passage, I think coincides really well with the spotlight that's being placed on the need that exists in Somalia. And so, Somalia and really the whole region of Eastern Africa. So I'm going to read this passage to you and then basically just call upon you as a church to do something about what's going on there. In Isaiah chapter 58, he says, "Cry loudly. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet and declare to my people their transgression and to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me day by day and to light to know my ways, as a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinance of their God. They ask me for just decisions. They delight in the nearness of God. Why have we fasted and you do not see? Why have we humbled ourselves and you do not notice? Behold, on the day of your fast, you find your desire and drive hard all your workers. Behold, you fast for contention and strife and to strike with a wicked fist. You don't fast like you do today to make your voice heard on high. And he asked this question. He says, is it a fast like this which I choose? A day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? And in these verses, we see the writer here identifying the problem and identifying God's response to the way that the people of God were treating those who were in true desperate need. And then we find in verses 6 and 7 the solution to the problem. We find in verses 6 and 7 what God says the people of God need to do for the people who are in need. In verses 6 and 7, he says, "Is this not the fast which I choose? To loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into the house? When you see the naked, to cover him." A key statement in verse 7, "and to not hide yourself from your own flesh." We see in verses 1 through 5 the problem that's presented here. We see in verses 6 through 7, God says, okay, here's what I want you to do as a people of God. I want you to begin caring for the hungry, caring for the afflicted. I want you to do something about the reality that exists here. And then in the following verses, in verses 8 through 11 and 12, we see what will happen if we are obedient. And as we introduce this series, I want you to hear the, I think, the grand vision and the goal of what we would want to see happen. In verse 8, this is in response to, if we divide our bread with the hungry, we bring the homeless poor into the house, we don't hide ourselves from our own flesh, we do something about what's going on in the world. In verse 8, it says, "Then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth. Your righteousness will go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry, and he will say, 'Here I am.' If you remove the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, and if you give yourself to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will rise in darkness, and your gloom will become like midday. And the Lord will continually guide you and satisfy your desire in scorched places. Give strength to your bones. You will be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations." And I want you to key in on these last two sentences. "You will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell." You know, as we begin looking at this text, and we're going to be in this text for the next 4 weeks, there were a couple of different ways that I could come and present this to you. I could either kind of come and try to do a bait and switch thing where I start, you know, we talk about jokes and funny things that are going on and kind of warm you up and do that, take that approach. Or I could come and basically say, the reason that you don't have air conditioning today is because I think in America we are self-absorbed. And in America we are quick to complain and gripe and grumble when we don't have all of our needs met. In America today, I think one of the greatest sins that we are committing not only against God but against all of humanity is that we have come to believe that all of our resources belong to us. And I'm talking about just American Christianity in general. We have this, I think, pretty weak, pathetic, self-absorbed view of Christianity that basically revolves around us. And if you look at the numbers, you look at the statistics, you can argue with me or my tone or what I'm saying, but the bottom line truth is we in the Western world pretty much revolve around ourselves, and there's very little that we do on a global scale to help the needs of the world around us. Now, when I stand up here and say that, I'm making that as kind of a general declaration, a general statement about the state of the entire church. I don't know your heart. I don't know your life. I don't know your financial situation. I don't know what you give. I don't know how much you give. And I'm not going to assume to know that. But I am saying that in general, I think that God would want us to see as a group of people that He has blessed us, not so that we can be a blessing to ourselves. He has blessed us not so that we can continue to pour back into ourselves. God has blessed us so that we can be a blessing to others. And so as I've thought through and prayed through, studied this text and looked at what's going on in the world right now, I think that there is an incredible opportunity for us as American believers to realize that God's concern is for the nation. God's concern is for the world. God's concern is for the people who right now are living in a place they would love to be able to come to a place and worship like this, air conditioning or not. And so I want to do this in kind of maybe, I realize, an uncomfortable fashion, and kind of an abrupt, just sort of straightforward fashion, put a spotlight on the fact that for many of us, we need God to do a work in our hearts. For many of us, we need God to move in and say, it's more important that you seek to meet the needs of others than it is the stinking frustration that you have in your heart and your mind that's causing you to be mad because there's no air conditioning right now. And it was interesting to me in the first service. I don't know how many people went back to Carl and said, this is stupid, this is dumb, why are we doing this? And I want to say, that's why. That's why we're doing this. That's why we want to come together and rally around this idea that there is a bigger picture. There is a global perspective that God, in His heart, wants us as a church to embrace. And it has more to do with whether or not your sweat glands are producing something right now. There's a bigger picture. And for those of you right now who say, I just don't get it, I'm not whatever, you know, I don't want to be too pessimistic on the front end of this thing, but I know how we generally tend to operate. And we generally tend to be kind of short-sighted. We're not really aware of why this is going on or what's going on. And I would just say to you, would you invite God to do a work in your heart? Would you invite God to move in the midst of this entire series and help you see the things that you might not normally see? And so that's just kind of my little brief disclaimer as we get going here today. That I believe that over the course of these 4 weeks, God can move in and do a work in all of our hearts. And yeah, next Sunday we'll show up and maybe we'll have air conditioning and all of the nice amenities that we normally have. But I want us to see, I want us to move closer to reality during these next 4 weeks. So with that said, I want you to look with me in Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58, in verses 1 through 5, we're not going to really dive in, you know, deep into any of this text here. But in verses 1 through 5, we basically see the general problem that God presents through Isaiah to the people here. And in 1 through 5, we find that because the people had turned their eyes away from the poor, the needy, the oppressed, God had in some sense turned His eyes away from them. Because the people of God had sort of closed their ears and hardened their hearts, God in some sense had done the same to the people. And if we rewind all the way back to Isaiah chapter 1 verse 15, we find the same thing. We find in Isaiah 59 verse 2 that because of the people of God, their unwillingness to actually care for the needs of those around them, that had had an effect on their walk with God. These people were presenting spiritual offerings. They were going through the spiritual activities. But they weren't really doing anything about the people of God that God had placed in front of them that were in genuine need. And so what I want us to draw from this, and this may be helpful for some of you, who you come in here and you know, I don't know, maybe you're hard-hearted, you feel like spiritually you're dry, there just things aren't going well for you. I think we can look from this passage here and find this general principle at work. That God's work in your life depends to some extent upon your work in the lives of others. I'll say it like this. God's work on your behalf depends to some extent upon your work on behalf of others. So if we are not willing to spend ourselves and give ourselves as good stewards of the resources that God has given us, we're going to be like the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea being a sea that's always receiving, but it's never giving, and so it just becomes basically spoiled. This place that's not really good for anything. It's not rich. It's not. There's no vitality there. There's no life there. And in verses 1 through 5, we get that general picture that God is expressing His displeasure toward the people, and it has sort of this, I would call it maybe a hateful or a real condemning type tone in the beginning of this passage. Because God is basically saying, you know, you go through the spiritual motions, you go through the spiritual activities, you go through all these things and you appear religious and pious, But if you're not caring for the needs of the people who are around you, if you're not caring for the poor and the oppressed and all of these people, then if you would, just kind of quit. You know, quit going through the spiritual offerings if you're not going to practice physical obedience. So we see that in these first five verses, but in verses 6 and 7, this is really, I think, the application, this is the take home, this is what God wants to see happen. When he lays out for the people what he wants to see take place, he says, "Is this not the fast which I choose? To loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free, break every yoke." In verse 7, key verse, "Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry? Bring the homeless poor into the house. When you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh." See, God presents here, I believe, in verses 6 and 7, what he wants to see happen, and a principle of what he wants to see happen that is universal. God has blessed us, as I said before, not just so that we can kind of be containers or receptacles of that blessing. God has blessed us so that we can be a blessing to others. So right now, in your minds, I hope that you're beginning to think that, okay, maybe there's a little rewiring that needs to take place in my perspective and in my motives. Because what God wants to do through us as a church and through you as individuals is use the resources that he's given you to be a good steward in other places. So in verses 6 and 7, basically the solution to this entire thing, what is it that we need to do in response to the greater needs that exist, the solution is given here. So with that said, one of the questions I know that some people would raise is, well, aren't there enough people, you know, across the street from me that need help? I know people who are poor. Why can't we just help people here? Here's one of the reasons why I want to put a spotlight on the Horn of Africa, because that is kind of a worldwide scale right now. It's something that is taking place, and I believe that it is going to be incredibly helpful for us as a church to have our eyes opened up to something beyond just what's taking place in America. And give you kind of a picture for what I'm talking about, and maybe for those of you who are more visual, I put together a couple of charts here. The first chart is just a comparison of relative poverty. If you see on the far left, you have the people, this is basically people who live on less than a dollar a day. Now, a dollar a day is going to, over the course of a year, going to amount to about $365 per year. And the second column there, you have people who live on less than $10 a day. That's going to amount to about $3,650 per year. All right, in America, the U.S. poverty level is $10,890. So what I want you to get here is that in America, the people who are considered at a poverty level are people who make $10,890. That's about three times as much as a significant number of people in the world. Now, how many of you would like to go home and say to your wife or whoever, you know, men as your providers, that guess what, we're going to have to start living on $11,000 per year? We would probably have this look like, okay, we're selling our home, we're selling our vehicles, things are going to have to change. That would even be an incredibly difficult thing. And so I don't want to minimize the significance of poverty here in America. What I do want to do is to show you that relative to the conditions in other parts of the world, that's a true picture of poverty globally. This next slide, I think, is also a helpful slide that really paints a picture for why, as Americans, I believe we need to have our horizons, our perspectives broadened. The number of people who live on less than $1 per day is 1.1 billion. 1.1 billion. The number of people worldwide who live on less than $10 a day is about 80% of the population. Now, I did some math, and this is going to be, it's a rough estimate, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 billion people. 5 billion people who live on less than $10 a day. In America, U.S. poverty, there are 43,600,000 people who live at that level. Now, God cares about 43,600,000 people in America who live on poverty. Make that very clear. But what I want us to see, what I want you to see as a body, is that when we look at the condition and the need in the world, there is a far greater need that exists beyond the borders of America. And so as opposed to, sometimes we have this kind of American-centric way of thinking where we sort of think that America's needs are the greatest needs and the things that are going on in our world are the most pressing needs in the entire world, when in reality, it's a pretty small part of the picture. When in reality, there are some 5 billion people who are living on less than $10 per day. And so I present these are numbers. I don't know that God is necessarily all that concerned about numbers. He's concerned about people. I present this to try to give us a glimpse and a picture of what reality is. And in this series, as we walk through Isaiah 58, as we desire to move closer to reality, we need to begin with an understanding of what reality is. We need to begin with an understanding of what is it that's taking place in areas that I cannot see currently. Once we've defined reality, then it's my heart that we would all say, we would have this confession together, that I've moved closer to reality. If reality is defined by people who are living in some of the worst conditions in the world, then I would call upon you to not say, okay, I'm going to change the whole world. I would call upon you to say, I'm going to do something about what's going on there. And it's not, here's the thing, it's not enough for me to continue to ignore it. It's not enough for me to continue to live as if it really isn't happening. It's not enough for me to say, because there are 5 billion people and I can't help all of them, there are 1 billion people who live on less than a dollar a day and I can't do anything for them. It's not good enough for us to continue to live as if those people don't exist. Because here's the thing, you and I, we don't have a responsibility. We don't have a stewardship to change the entire world. We don't have a stewardship to change those 5 billion, but we do have a responsibility. We do have a stewardship to do what we can with what God has given us for the advancement of His kingdom and the gospel worldwide. And so I'm coming to you today as a church and saying, would you open up your heart? Would you come before your Father and say to Him, Father, I need You to work in me. I need You to move in me. I need You to help me see what You see. I need You to help me care in the way that You care. I need You to help me have my eyes opened to reality. Because there are incredible needs that if I don't address those, if I don't give myself to doing something about those, then I'll go the rest of my life basically just living as if those people don't exist. And if we will do this, the picture that is painted in verses 8 through 11, I think is an incredibly beautiful portrait of what the people of God, in this case the Israelites, for us today that would be the church. But there is an incredible portrait, beautiful portrait of what can happen. I'll just drop down to verse 12. It says, those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations. And hear this, you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell. So I think there are a number of reasons why we tend to hide our eyes from what's going on. If you're like me, one reason may be that it just makes you uncomfortable. And so as you come in here, you're already uncomfortable because we don't have any air, and then that discomfort is increased because there was a video that was shown, and it's just a it's a discomforting thing. And so the easy tendency is for us to sort of turn our eyes away from that because, let's be honest, how many of us like to feel guilt? How many of us like to feel this sense of, I know I need to be doing something, but I'm not doing anything. And, there are a lot of us that we just turn away for that reason. There are some of us who I think we probably turn away because we have a view of reality that is somewhat skewed. What I mean by that is that our view of reality often is determined through a skewed lens, which is the media. And if you paid attention to the media, how things operate, Thursday morning, just give you an example. This is in the midst of a time when there are some, 11 million people who are on the verge of starvation. Thursday morning, here were some of the headlines that our media was communicating to us as a country. One was, I sound so gripey and negative today. I just want to acknowledge that. But gosh, it's so frustrating to me. It said the headlines were about penguins, Obama's birthday, GM's quarterly profits, the additional cost of eating healthy. As if these were the most important things that were going on in the world. And again, as a nation, we can get so stirred up and in a frenzy over, you know, the Casey Anthony trial. And we can, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours of media attention that are given to that story. All I want to point out is, in reality, if we're going to move closer to reality, that's one life, that's an incredibly important thing. But in terms of the global picture, there's something much larger that's at work here. And what I'm trying to communicate to you, I think, is, well, not totally accurate, but more accurate representation of what God's heart is for the entire world. And it's not for us just to get locked into one or two things, but to be able to see from a more comprehensive perspective what's taking place beyond just these American borders. I think another reason why it's easy for us to hide our eyes is because some of us may tend to make sort of overly simplistic judgments about why people are in the condition that they're in. You know, we say, well, it's their own fault, it's their government's fault, it's whatever. And there are a lot of, I know, probably legitimate reasons why people are in the situation that they're in. But at the end of the day, these are people that God has created. These are people, many of whom, millions of whom, did nothing to be in the situation that they're in. And I'm just coming to you today and saying, we need to open up our eyes to reality. We need to open up our eyes to what's going on in other parts of the world. And when we see in verse 12 this picture, when it says that you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell, my hope is that God does something in the time that we have here over the next 4 weeks as we walk through this passage. My hope is that God opens up our hearts to see from His perspective. He opens up our hearts and helps us to realize the ways in which we're self-absorbed, the ways that we are so concerned with ourselves and our lives and our nation and our county and our crops and our, that sometimes we've forgotten about the greater need that exists. And when all is said and done, here's really the end goal for this series. If we have multiple layers between ourselves and the people who are living in the worst conditions in the world, if we have the layer of need, the layer of comfort, the layer of luxury, you know, all these things that sort of separate us from people who are living over there. And suppose those people are over there somewhere and their reality is that they live on $10 a day. Their reality is that they're not sure if they're going to have food tomorrow. That's their reality. And our reality is over here. Our reality is that there's not one person who's going to have to walk home here today. Our reality is that we have transportation. God willing, you have some kind of air conditioning because you're going to want to use it this afternoon. Our reality is we're going to go and eat somewhere in a nice restaurant. That's our reality. And I hope that there's not one person in here who walks away just feeling like this burden of guilt or whatever because God has blessed you. It's not the hope, it's not the intent. The gospel is not about guilt. The gospel is about hope, it's about transformation. So that's what this series ultimately is going to be about. But I want you to see as part of that transformation that if their reality over there is that they're barely getting by to survive, and our reality over here is incredible affluence relative to the world's standards, the hope over the next 4 weeks is that we would simply move closer to their reality. All the while realizing that hopefully we're never going to be in a situation where we make a dollar a day or we have to live on $10 a day. But we can take intentional steps to close the gap between their reality and ours. And so we're going to be talking about specific, tangible things that we can do as individuals to begin closing the gap between their reality and ours. Because if you were in their shoes, if you were where they are right now, wouldn't you want somebody who could do something about it to do something? That's you. That's us. That's me. We have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to do something, to make a change, to make a difference, to be the hope that somebody needs. So if you would this morning, as we get ready in just a moment, we're going to take up our offering. We'll have this offering going through the next 4 weeks. This morning, you may say, you know, I really don't know what I can give, if I can give anything. I would just ask you to simply begin praying about this. Begin praying about giving to the Horn of Africa. We found a fund. It's through the SBC. It's called the World Hunger Fund. It's online if you want to look at it, worldhungerfund.com. It's in your notes. It's in your bulletin there. We also have a lot of flyers that I mentioned earlier. You can pick one of those up. You can find out more about that. But if you'll just, in your offering this morning, as you write out a manual, if you want to make a special designated offering, you can just put Horn of Africa toward that. And frankly, if you say, well, you know, I don't know, maybe some of my tithe ought to go to that or whatever, listen, just give. Give whatever God puts on your heart. But you can make that out to Horn of Africa. Again, if you're not ready or prepared for that this morning, you'll have other opportunities to do that as well. But I'd encourage you to do that. I'm going to pray for us and trust that God is going to take what has been shared this morning and begin to open up our hearts. Let's pray.